Good morning, everyone. It's a really beautiful, beautiful morning. How did your morning go today, Majid?
As always, I hate mornings. I don't want to wake up. I want to sleep till the afternoon. My brain works best in the afternoon. But yeah, it's a good morning.
It is a good morning. And you know, today, morning, Majid. So I've been hearing a lot of people raving about Adnok's coffee. So in the gas station.
Oh.
And I really had to try it out because I love coffee. I love Arabica specifically. And I was like, you know what? Let me go give it a try this morning. And Majid, Adnok's coffee tastes better than Arabica.
A lot of brands, actually, but not only Arabica, a lot of brands.
I was just, I guess, really surprised because, you know, it wasn't that expensive and it was from the gas station, but it was better than Arabica. It was completely insane and it just really energized me this morning. And, you know, while I was drinking the coffee, Majid, you know, just, you know, speaking to my family in general, you know, when we go out, when we go eat, it really got me on this topic of like overconsumption. So like, for example, like, you know, when I go to like a buffet, I'm always one of those people, I like to like grab on to like really small things. You know, I'll fill up my plate with everything, but like small portions of everything because I really don't like, you know, waste. I really, really don't like waste. Waste, it's such a shame. It's really such a shame. But then I noticed something when you're like at these buffets, you have these people who are filling up their plates like they're towers. Are you one of those people?
No.
But they fill up their plates like towers and they don't eat it.
Yeah,
they
it goes to waste.
Yeah, they don't eat it whatsoever. And it's like, just like in general, I feel like in the media, we've been seeing this movement, like the Big Back movement. So if you guys know like that audio, Big Back, Big Back, it's just, it's like everywhere. And you know, there was this one creator, she posted this video, Majid, where I don't think she like edited it properly. I don't think she meant to do this. But basically after she ate something, she spit it out, like right down and then started on the next food. And it's like, I feel like there's this trend of like overconsumption now, you know?
It's just that sometimes influencers have to try so many things that they don't want to eat everything.
But I don't think it's just influencers though.
They're influencers, yeah, they influence people, but yeah, some of them don't do a good job at it. But food influencers, obviously, if you're doing 10 videos in a day, sometimes a lot of influencers, they have this habit. They shoot like 4 or 5 videos in a single day and then they obviously push it out every day or like every week or twice a week. They have their own schedules. But yeah, if you're eating 5 meals a day and you're going to 5 places, you won't be able to eat everything. And I saw it firsthand with Drew Binsky. He came to Pakistan. I saw him taking one bite of a biryani for the camera and then that's it. Then he was like, next move to the next spot. So we went to a Nehari place. We love to eat like at least 2 breads and the whole Nehari plate and we want to finish everything. He just took 2 bites for the camera. He was like, oh, great, everything. And then we moved on. So it's kind of a part of their job. But
I
you telling
job.
That she spit it out.
But it's such a shame. It's such a shame when you know that there are people in the world, they can't even afford this and they can't even get a meal in the day and you're just behaving this way. Like, for example, there's this food blogger in Dubai. Her name is Maria. She's the reason, I believe, why Fixed Dessert got very famous in the first place. She tried out one of their chocolates and it has like over 70 million views right now on TikTok. And I always watch her videos and I notice something. Right after she takes a bite of whatever it is, donut, croissant, she tries out everything for a bunch of cafes. Pretty sure they're ads. Right after she tries it out, the video cuts to her eating the next thing. It never actually shows her swallowing it. And what's funny is people in the comment section, they're always like, oh, like, how are you so skinny? And I'm like, guys, like, she's not eating this. She's not swallowing it.
Best case scenario, she's just taking a bite.
Exactly. Yeah. And anyways, going for our first topic today, Dubai is welcoming a lot of billionaires in the country. So the UAE, it's actually the UAE in general, they witnessed a 7% increase in its billionaire population in 2023, totaling to 48 billionaires with a combined wealth of $205 billion. Now, Dubai specifically, it's leading with 39 of these billionaires, so most of them, and it's really solidifying its reputation as a hub for the super wealthy. And these high-profile residents, they include entrepreneurs like Yusuf Ali, the owner of Lulu Hypermarket, which we've just recently seen that it's publicly listed and its IPO did really well. We have Hussein Sejwani, the Damac owner, and finally we have Pavel Durov,
who's in France. trans and a house yes. arrest and a country arrest, actually.
Yes, and yeah. he's the owner of Telegram, and he yeah. has the UAE passport. And by yeah. the way, he actually has a predicted net worth of over $15 billion, yeah. and he's one of the youngest billionaires in the Middle East in general. So, you know, we're really seeing how all of these billionaires, they've really stationed their power right over here in Dubai, right yeah. over here in the UAE.
The good thing about all of these is they are homegrown. So Telegram yeah. was brought to Dubai by Powell. Apart from that, Sajwani, Lulu's Yusuf Ali, Sunny Varki, yeah. the owner of Gems Education, mm. a lot of them are homegrown billionaires.
Yeah.
So we haven't exported them. Mm. But we will see soon, and we are already seeing that a lot of them are moving mm. here. So they built are. Their wealth somewhere else, UK, China, etc., etc. But they're coming to Dubai because of a lot of things. Mm. It's always we have to list it down. No tax on income. Mm. There's safety and security. There's a very good business mm. environment. There's like 1 million reasons right now to come to Dubai. So
yeah,
everyone is flocking in here.
And specifically with like Pavel Durov, for example, the reason why he has Telegram stationed here is because of the fact that when he tried to get it to operate in America, he had the FBI trying to be involved to yeah. Hire, to specifically have people be hired by Telegram who work for the FBI. And here he's able to operate Telegram while still providing people with like very private chats,
yeah.
you know, just very private use of Telegram. So, but you know, there's something that I've been recently thinking about, Majid. You know that supermarket Nesto?
Yeah.
Nesto began in like during COVID, by the way. Like I noticed like just during COVID, I saw the first store, and now like, look how many stores they have. I've been thinking about this lately, by the way. Like how, like out of nowhere, they had one store and it just got really big. So this is just in general, it's an example that the UAE in itself,
yeah.
when people bring their businesses here, even if they grew their wealth elsewhere,
yeah.
like how you said, when they actually bring it here, it allows it to grow more.
Yeah.
You know, their sphere of influence, it's just expanded more. But this story specifically, the reason why, you know, we're talking about it in general on the show, it's not because of the fact that, you know, there's more billionaires in the UAE. We know that. It's the fact that, in contrast, Saudi Arabia's billionaire population has declined by 4% to 68%, with their collective wealth dropping from $205 billion to $195 billion. Now, this has been reported by Wealth Access Billionaire Census from yeah. 2023, which just in general highlighted global billionaire trends. And you're seeing this. Now, this is crazy.
And again, the Saudi billionaires, which were mentioned in the report, they're also, a lot of them are, again, out of the 68.
Mm.
Out of the 68, a lot of them are homegrown. Again, Saudi has a very big market. They have a very big oil exporting market.
Yeah.
So, because of oil, a lot of them are big, but others are big because of their businesses as well. The examples I see here is Muhammad Al-Amoudi. He's a construction and oil magnate, so oil. But mm. there's Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal Al-Saud, who is also part of our next story. He is the founder and CEO of Kingdom Holding Company, which is mm. basically building the tallest building in the world, the Jeddah Tower. So he is there on the list. Muhammad bin Isa Al-Jaber, founder of the MBI Group, he's there. So all of these people, like the good thing that I saw in the list is a lot of them are homegrown. And mm. now the other billionaires from other regions are moving here. So it's a very good sign that we have homegrown billionaires. It's not just
yeah.
like we're exporting them or importing them.
Exporting so, humans.
Yeah. So that's the good part about this report. And the segue that we've already given, that the X story that we're going to talk about, the AGBI, that's a publication, they did a very nice piece on how Twitter, which is now called X, mm. has lost 70% of its value. And now, because of that, the Kingdom Holding, which is owned by Prince Waleed Al-Waleed bin Talal, the Kingdom Holding Company, they invested $2 billion when Musk mm. was buying Twitter. So he mm. bought it for $44 billion. $2 billion was given by Saudi's
yeah.
Kingdom Holding Company.
And also the Qatar Investment Authority.
Yeah, Qatar they Investment gave 300 something.
$375 million.
Yeah. So they invested a lot of money in Musk and mm. in X. and it has now depleted.
The losses are they're absolutely insane. Yeah. Now, just Majid has just said that they lost 70% of value. Now, when we break that down, it's actually reported that this has caused Saudi Arabia's holding to lose $1.4 billion in investment. Yeah. And the revenue from X, just in general, it fell from 22% year on year in 2023. And you know, the reason why this matters so much is that with limited prospects of a full recovery, Kingdom Holding and other investors, they might face long-term uncertainty in recouping their investments. And not just that, I don't just think of the position of Saudi Arabia because of the fact that we know that they're very wealthy. You know, their sovereign wealth fund, it's very strong. They have, not only do they have oil wells, but it's a very diversified country now. But I'm honestly concerned for Musk on this one.
Yeah, but the good thing, I think, that comes from this is that Musk is now in the government. He's a consultant. He's part of the DOGE, D-O-G-E, Department of Government Efficiency. He has a lot of other things that are going good for him. His ex-AI, it's been valued at now $46 billion, more than the money he paid for X, $44 billion. SpaceX is doing good. He's catching rockets back, which is a very good sign. So there's a lot of good. Tesla is doing good again. So a lot of things are going good for him. What I see is the people who invested in Musk, I always say when they invested in X, they didn't invest in X. They invested in Musk.
Yes,
so now they can reap rewards from it. Mm. So maybe he'll redirect their investment. Maybe he will give them some share or some partnership in other ventures. So eventually they will earn money and they will make money. It's a very smart investment in a person, not in a startup, not in a company, not in a takeover of Twitter. It's a investment that they did in the person. And recently, Linda Yassarino, the CEO of X, she was in Saudi Arabia.
Prince Waleed bin Talal.
He hosted her. So it shows that there is something going on.
Yeah.
It's not just an entertainment trip she took to Saudi Arabia.
And
there is something else going on.
In 2025, TikTok is going to open their regional headquarters in Saudi Arabia. Just recently, we've seen Snapchat has also opened. And even the CEO of Snapchat himself,
he was there.
But you know what? Even though they've experienced these losses, Majid, you know, as you said, because they've invested in the person, and you know, Elon Musk, you know, he's just gotten one of a very large position in the American government. I feel like what we're going to see is that Donald Trump himself is going to start engaging in X more. And I think because of that, that will, you know, that will increase the engagement on X.
Yeah, he was banned from X, which was Twitter back then, because of his tweets and everything. He created Truth Socials, which is owned by him. And so eventually, now the only problem is that Truth Social and X will have competition because obviously both of them are social media platforms. But I don't think Trump's biggest venture, biggest business venture is Truth Social. Mm. It's big, but have you ever used it? Have you ever downloaded it? Truth Socials?
Truth Socials? No. Yeah. I'm not much of an X person, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not. I don't.
But even looking like the newer one, the Blue Sky thing, that game, it has more for subscribers than Truth Social. So Truth Social is like a social media platform for supporters of Trump. So he created a social media platform especially for his supporters. So the only clash that I see happening between Trump and Elon is over whose social media platform is better. But obviously, Trump, Musk will win with X. It has a larger subscriber base and everything. Apart from that, they're doing good. Let's see when Trump comes into power. He's appointing a lot of people in a lot of important positions. I did a lot of stories on them. You can go and check out our social media.
But I also think it's really important, other than Elon Musk leveraging the political position that he has with Trump, I think that can't be the only thing that will drive revenue to X. I feel like he really needs to, you know, innovate his monetization scheme.
Yeah.
He really needs to do that. Maybe like implement subscriptions. But if he does that, a lot of people will
be
angry.
He has already done it. You can pay to get a blue tick. Mm-hmm. The legacy tick is free, the golden one. But the blue tick is paid for. Mm-hmm. You have to pay $20-something
per
month.
Would you do it?
No, I would not, but a lot of people do it. You see a lot of people on X who have bought the blue tick. Mm-hmm. Instagram, Facebook have introduced a paid blue tick. So that is one of the models, but it didn't work well for him. And it's very small part of the total revenue. Mm. The best revenue, the biggest revenue stream is always ads by big corporations. They held back. They, Musk has a case going on against a lot of them as well. It's a lot of, it's a spider web. A lot of things are happening around X, but most probably the next year, as soon as Trump comes into power, we see him in government, we'll see a clearer picture of where X will go. And I think it will grow back to its normal revenue.
I definitely
because
think it will
he is in a
users.
State of power now.
Exactly.
So it will be. It will affect people that if you're like marketing on X, it's better because now he's in power.
Imagine, so, you know, can I tell you something funny? When I was younger, I was actually banned from using X.
Oh,
well,
good.
Previously Twitter. No, I'm being serious with you because basically what ended up happening is my sister really used Twitter, formerly Twitter. She really used it. Like to the point like she was one of those people like you know when people are just arguing with each other on X? My sister was one of those people, and my parents, that really made them angry. That really, and they were like, no, you know, you can't destroy your reputation. People can't know what you have to think about everything.
Yeah.
So they were like, you know what, you're not allowed to use it. And I just, that's why I never got it, by the way. I just, at some point, obviously, the ban went away.
Yeah.
I could, of course I can get it, but I guess because of the fact that I didn't grow up on it, I just didn't think there's a reason for it.
Very weird PG-18 explanation for banning kids from X. And it's an open secret. I'm not like I'm revealing something. Twitter or X now is the only platform which allows you to upload porn. You just have to tag it. No social media platform on earth right now has the ability.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. So, sorry for telling you this.
I didn't even know this.
Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all the platforms that you talk about, they have a very strict policy against pornographic content or pornography. X is very, even Twitter was very open to it. I did a whole research piece back in my time, like six, seven years ago.
They're really open for everything.
Yeah, so Twitter is actually open to pornographic content. You just have to flag it. So that's the point with Twitter that a lot of people have contention on, that it's not good for kids because something can pop up. So that's the problem with X and Twitter. It's part of
that.
A free speech movement that, it should be allowed. People who want to watch it will watch it one way or the other. But a lot of people also are like, that. Don't put it. Don't give them a chance. So yeah, it's a whole debate. We'll do it someday.
It's that. Because like my parents specifically, they weren't concerned necessarily about that
pornographic
aspect.
A lot of adults
aspect,
know about it. Don't tell the kids because then you open a door for them. It's their choice to go through it or not.
I was aware of it though. Because I always see on TikTok when like a big scandal happens with the celebrity, when something is leaked, everyone is like, go to Twitter to see it.
Yeah.
You know, formerly. They always say, go to Twitter. I wouldn't do that. But the reason why my parents were specifically concerned about it is because they believe that it would ruin our digital footprint.
Yeah.
Especially when you're at like a young age and you just want to say whatever you want and you have this like justice warrior spirit. Do you know what I mean? My parents, they don't want us to have like a horrible footprint.
I guess that is why Australia banned it, right? For 16-year-olds. They have a law in place now.
Yeah.
But let's see how it will be implemented. It's going to be very complicated. Mm. And the funny thing about it is that there's a up to the maximum limit of the fine is $50 million. So I read that and I was like, okay, $50 million? That's a lot of money. So it's very strict. The law is coming into place. They have voted on it most probably by now.
Good for them, and, honestly. Because
but
social media
the implementation will be very tricky. How will you stop someone from using social media on their phone in their house? So it's going to be very complicated. Let's see how it pans out.
I think that's up to the parents. Because I remember I used to have these cousins, Majid. Oh, my God. Their parents. They were ruthless. You know what they did? They placed timers on their laptops with passwords.
Good.
And only the parent knew the password. Good. And they had like, what do you mean good?
It's a good parental control.
I don't like it. On the laptop, they had like, I think like a 3-hour, 4-hour limit. No, that's completely evil.
No, it's
like,
not
what if
evil.
You want to watch the next episode? How do you do that?
They're limiting your screen time. You don't understand it right now, but eventually you will. That limiting screen time, there's like 3 or 4 mental conditions that have like originated, and they're well researched upon. There's digital autism now, which is like completely researched upon. There's like
Digital autism.
Yeah, because a lot of kids who grow up and they're very prone to, like, they use screen for 8, 10, 12 hours, they're developing, their speech is being delayed, their operational abilities, a lot of things are being delayed. So there's a whole bunch of research on it. Google Scholar, go find all the researches. Magic. You'll see a lot of them.
I don't agree with you.
I have a son, so I was reading a lot about it.
I know you're saying this, but yeah. Those cousins, right, they got all that limited screen time and everything. Me and my sister, it's not that we were limited. Our parents would check our history every, like, they do it, like, every once in a blue moon. Like, we wouldn't be able to tell. It wasn't something timed. Yeah. It was just, like, every 2 months, oh, what are you doing on your iPad? What are you doing? Do you know what I mean? But can I tell you something? These people are the most antisocial individuals I know in my life. They don't know how to make conversations with people. And you know why? I feel like because their parents made all the decisions for them, they have that lack of agency. Do you know what I mean? Like, because
this
of the
goes to parenting. This is a whole different discussion.
I know, but I was given free rein with social media, and I'm a very social person. I made the decision late. There was a time, by the way, I had like a screen time of 10 hours. Don't get me wrong. There was a time I was like on social media like all the time. Like the second I get home from school, boom, I was on my iPad. I was watching something. But because of the fact that my parents didn't restrict me, I had that agency of deciding later on, you know what, it's not worth it to be on my phone that much. Those people, because they weren't given that agency, it's almost as if their personalities were stifled.
Not everyone grows up to be like you were. Every person is different. So, yeah.
Okay.
Parenting styles differ on the basis of a kid you have. Some kids, they grow up, they start talking at 1.5 years. Some kids, they don't talk till 5, 6, 7 years. So every kid is different. You treat them differently. But yeah, screen time, it's now well documented. That's the only thing I can say. It's very well documented that more screen time has more problems for the kids. Because it goes into another tangent, but the very simple explanation is Disney, Pixar, Cocomelon, all the biggest products that you see on YouTube Kids or YouTube, the kids watch this. Every 2 seconds, the frame changes. So their eyes, their brains are wired for this hit of oxytocin, the happy hormone, for after every 4 or 5 seconds. Mm. The whole research says that. Again, read a lot because I have a son. So yeah, that happens. So that is why screen time is bad. Screen time itself is not bad. Mm. The stuff that they're watching. For example, my son grew up playing games. Put the fish in the water bowl, put the birds on the tree. That's okay. So I tried to do that. But when he got addicted to YouTube Kids, I saw a difference in him. So, again, very, very different tangent from business. But it happens. Different kids have different reactions to different stuff.
I think it really just depends on, like, the child. Because, like, can I tell you something crazy, Majid? When I was young and I went into school, I actually struggled to speak English. I couldn't take on the language easily. Like, to the point that the school itself was like, you know,
I also read about this. Bilingual kids have a speech delay by nature because they're listening to two languages at a point.
Oh.
So that's also a whole different research. Wow. So yeah, parenting is not easy. Get classes.
Yeah.
It's very important to learn, read, and do everything. Yes. Before you become a parent,
and
it's very important now in the digital age.
Yeah. We're going to have a very small break. We have a very, very special guest coming up, the Bitcoin MENA director, Greg Davis. Please tune in. Joining us today is Greg Davis, director of Bitcoin MENA 2024, the first major Bitcoin-only conference in the Middle East, happening December 9th and 10th at the ADNIC Center in Abu Dhabi. Living in the UAE for nearly a decade, Greg transitioned from maritime and yachting industry to really leading Bitcoin innovation in the region. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And we just want to start with, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at Bitcoin MENA.
Yeah, okay, so I represent a company called BTC Inc. We're a US-based company. We've got a portfolio of companies, Bitcoin Magazine being the oldest publication in Bitcoin. That's our publication. We've got the Bitcoin conferences. So this is the first one, as you say, in the Middle East, and we're in Abu Dhabi. We've obviously got our flagship conference, which is moves around the US. We just had one in Nashville, which Donald Trump spoke at. And next year, we're going to be moving to Las Vegas for our national conference. We've also got conferences in Asia and a European conference as well. So that's another part of our business. And then we've got sort of a UTXO management, which is like an investment and you know, accelerator arm. But the Bitcoin MENA concept is to bring the Bitcoin conference to Abu Dhabi and then use that as a launch base for all of our other verticals. We want to have the magazine in Arabic. We want to try and support local Bitcoin builders. So yeah, this is the start of something very big for us here in the region.
So I noticed that you go by this phrase of study Bitcoin, not crypto. I really want to know why. Why Bitcoin only?
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that on my LinkedIn. I think I'm trying to say, like, don't make the same mistakes as I made to a certain degree. Look, I very much make a differentiation between Bitcoin and crypto. You know, crypto, there is some interesting stuff. You know, there's some fantastic technology. You know, I've got some cool trainers that have got NFC chips in them that can be linked to the blockchain to prove authenticity. You know, that's some cool stuff. And there's a lot of things that will do very well. There's a lot of things that won't do well in that Bitcoin space. I think what happened to me was I started to get a bit of a crash course in sort of macroeconomics, maybe, when you study Bitcoin and read a few books and start to understand that fundamentally, in my opinion and in the opinion of an increasing number of people, that there is some fundamental problems with our monetary system, you know, money printing and all these things that, you know, particularly during the pandemic, the global monetary supply increased 40%, you know, so same amount of goods and services, all this additional money, that causes inflation, and that's what we're seeing now. And, it's people's savings, people work very, very hard. Yeah. You know, money for me is, you know, that's not from, I'm stealing this from Jack Mallers, but it's your time and energy in abstract form. Yeah. And that for me is really important because you're putting all this time and energy into accumulating money. Yeah. And then when they print money, that that takes the money away from you, your purchasing power at least. Mm. So Bitcoin, in my opinion, it fixes this to a certain degree. It's a lot more fair. It has its issues, and then, you know, this asset is only 15 years old, 16 years old, and there's lots of work to be done to improve things and make it scale, etc. But in my opinion, and the opinion of an increasing number of people, not just individual investors like me, but you know, we're now seeing big companies and even nation states adopting this asset. There's definitely a need. I think everybody's seeing that there's definitely a need for some harder money in this future.
You know, you specifically mentioned that you had previously, you know, made some mistakes. Tell me about them. Oh, no. How can we avoid them?
At least one mistake which you can tell.
By just buying Bitcoin. I don't spend too much time on social media outside of really X or Twitter. But I see lots of people sharing videos about, you know, this coin's going to go to the moon, meme coins. You know,
there was a time for NFTs as well. There's a lot of stuff.
Look, NFT, the actual NFT concept is extremely interesting. That technology, I think you'll find in the future will, you know, grow into something else. It was originally came through as art. But as I said, this is cool technology. This is a way to authenticate things digitally. Yeah. That's cool, but that's not money. If you want to actually put your hard-earned time and energy into something, in my opinion, if you want to go and invest in a crypto token or a meme token, you know, that's, you know, maybe I should say, but it's like almost like placing a sports bet or something like that. Mm. If it's something that you can be very flippant with. If you want to be a frugal saver and you've got a long time horizon, the only thing that I can almost say categorically will not end up at zero like a lot of these coins is Bitcoin, and it's going to continue to get stronger, I think.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell you my mistakes. See, I managed to avoid that.
Bitcoin just hit like 100,000
this
today.
Morning.
It was like the time of life for the people who love Bitcoin.
I'm extremely.
What do you think is next for Bitcoin? How far can it go? Because I remember recently, again, everyone is commenting on Bitcoin. Robert Kiyosaki, she met her at the Mecca campus. He was in Dubai recently. He said 2025, it will cross 500,000. That's like the biggest prediction I've heard. And then some people are still saying that, oh, when the founder somehow appears, Nakamoto, somehow he comes out, Bitcoin will crash to zero because his anonymity is the biggest X factor. So there's a lot of chatter. But you've really studied Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Where does it go from here? Up and up?
When you get these crazy predictions, and what I was talking about with regards to sort of the money supply.
Yeah.
If you're saying, like, I think Michael Saylor said recently, his prediction is around $13 million in about 21 years or something like that. And he's just basically using that as, if you say Bitcoin is the digital gold, then you look at the market cap of what gold is, and if Bitcoin was to catch gold up and become the same, you know, absorb as much as value in the market as gold has, then it brings that number close to that. But then you have to sort of look at it with a bit of thought and say, as I said at the beginning, if the what is guaranteed, and I'm confident when I say this, I can't be confident about what the price of Bitcoin is going to be, but I can be confident by saying that it's almost a mathematical certainty at this point that dollars, euros, these fiat government issued currencies are trending to zero. They have been doing for the last 100 years. We've got, you know, we're blessed in a country like this, but a lot of countries around the world have got an incredible amount of sovereign debt. In order to service that debt, they're going to have to, you know, print their currencies and deflate them. So when you say Bitcoin is going to be 13 million, you have to wonder what 13 million looks like in 20 years' time. You know, $1 million today in 10 years' time is probably going to have the purchasing power of about 500,000 of today's money. So it's sort of relative, you know. I think maybe in the future we'll see a time where millionaire is not the sort of title that people strive towards. It will be people that hold one Bitcoin, maybe.
Yeah.
That would be something. So it's, it's all relative, especially price. But I, in my opinion, we're in, we're using the tagline for Bitcoin, meaning the golden age of Bitcoin. You know, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, I go to Bitcoin meetups here in Dubai and I meet people that have been in the space for a long time and they're, you know, incredible coders. That's not, you know, devs. I'm not that type of person. I'm just somebody that's taken an interest in it. And I think that there's, we're in this stage now that we've gone through the kind of developer stages and the kind of early adopter stages. We're now seeing, you know, companies like MicroStrategy accumulating a lot of Bitcoin. A lot of other publicly listed companies are going to do that. Yeah. There's only a fixed amount of Bitcoin in the world. You know, there's only a certain amount that can go around. They say 21 million is the mathematical cap. You know, there's some that have lost. You know, so there's only a few million going around, and there's a lot of interest. So if companies and nation states and everybody start accumulating this asset, which I think is going to happen, and that's what we're going to talk a lot about Bitcoin Mina. We've got an incredible lineup of speakers. The interest and let's say the FOMO over the last few days has been insane. I'm sorry if I look tired, but working for a US company in the UAE, there's some late nights going on at the moment. But it's extremely exciting times, and to be bringing the Bitcoin conference to the UAE at a time where Bitcoin has hit this legendary number of 100K. I saw it when I woke up this morning before I came here, and it all seems like the simulation is real today, to be honest.
It's crazy. But not only are you guys bringing it to the UAE, you chose the wealthiest city in the world, by the way, Abu Dhabi. Tell us why, like, this was the perfect spot for this, because you said that, you know, you went to a lot of Bitcoin Mina meetups in Dubai. Why did you guys choose Abu Dhabi?
Yeah, okay, so not to be a personal shill here, but I actually used to work at the venue where the conference is going to be happening at the Adnex Center. And, you know, I was always interested in trying to tell people about Bitcoin, and I managed to orange pill. We call it orange pill when you make somebody understand Bitcoin. I managed to orange pill somebody quite senior there, the sort of portfolio director. And I said, look, we need to look into this. I think it could be a really, really positive event. The reason, my optics for it was, and when we had the team from BTC Inc. come over, the optics for me was exactly like what I said at the beginning, you know, and respectfully to a lot of the other events that happen across the region. I've attended a lot of crypto events, and often there is I'll be honest, a lot of scammers. There's another term for it, which I shouldn't use on the radio, but it certainly lacks a lot of quality, in my opinion. Mm. And maybe four or five people that have got a cool idea, but trying to just raise lots of money for it, and it's not really at that scale yet. So we chose Abu Dhabi because of the optics of it. It's the capital city. It's the home of the central bank. It's the leader of the nation, and we think the optics of having the first Bitcoin only conference in the UAE being in the capital city is some interesting optics. We have called it Bitcoin MENA for a reason. This isn't a UAE conference. This is not an Abu Dhabi conference. We have got Abu Dhabi written underneath it, but it is a MENA conference. Yeah. We want to make sure that this is a regional conference. So we've got our, North America conference, we've got a European conference, we've got an Asia conference, and we needed something that looked after this market here. But we're very happy to be in Abu Dhabi. It's a great time of the year for Abu Dhabi. Obviously, we're opening just after the F1 finishes, so there's been a lot of interest there. Obviously, Abu Dhabi Finance Week is also on. Yeah. There's the Business Week actually happening as well. So Abu Dhabi is going to be the center of the universe next week, and we're hopeful to try and get as many people through the door to see the amazing, incredible lineup of people that we've got at this conference. Yeah.
Just summarize for us, what can one expect? A newbie is coming to the conference and an expert. What can both of them expect?
Well, there's certainly something for everybody. Yeah. That's really important. Yeah. For me, I wanted to make sure that this conference really represented where we're at with Bitcoin. There's been, Bitcoin conferences before where there's been lots of crazy activations and human things picking up, your games and all these types of things. For me, we're kind of past that a little bit, and we wanted to put on something that really shows Bitcoin in its current trajectory and its current maturity. So if anybody wants to come and play crazy golf, that's not going to happen at our conference. But there is certainly going to be speakers speaking to an audience of all levels, complete introductory, all the way up to kind of experts and developer side of it. Also very much geared towards people in business and family offices and nations even. That are looking at this asset very seriously now to allocate a lot of capital towards. So absolutely something for everybody. Some of the brightest minds. I've been a fan of BTC Inc. for many years, and it's extremely cool that I'm now representing them, and I'm now working with some people that I've followed for a long time. But the lineup and the amount of people there, that even somebody that's never even considered it, or people that have been interested, and they now, it's very strange how when Bitcoin's $20,000, my phone's very quiet, but now it's $100,000, everybody's calling me. it's really strange, obviously the $100,000 ticker really does bring it back into the news. But we want everyone to know it's not too late. Michael Saylor said the other day, Bitcoin's still 0.1 million.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at, if you're trying to come into this with a get rich quick thing, then you need to go to a meme conference. You need to go to, a proper crypto conference where people can buy a coin and it goes 100x. The time of Bitcoin, going, I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but going completely parabolic is over. But if we're it's going to be slightly more incremental, let's say, not saying that it's not the best, in my opinion, asymmetric bet for your savings over the next 10 years. But certainly, if you want to come and learn about what I believe to be the future of money and all of the applications that I think people just don't understand, obviously, this region is abundant with energy.
Yeah.
The things that Bitcoin mining is now doing to improve the infrastructure of energy grids, demand response on those things, being able to capture flaring gas and then capturing that and using that energy to mine Bitcoin. We've got people that have got that build dams around the world who mine Bitcoin using that. It's actually incredibly environmentally friendly. We've kind of gone out of that phase of everybody going, oh, it uses more energy than this country or this industry. Once you go down the rabbit hole, if you do like 10 hours of Bitcoin, you're like, oh, I'm here for the number go up. If you get to like 50, 60 hours, you're kind of like, oh, there's this is actually a lot bigger, and you start getting into the macroeconomic side of it, and you get to kind of a couple of hundred hours, maybe 1,000 hours, and you really start to see that it's one of the most important innovations humanity has ever had.
So we have like a last minute left. Tell us, let's do a quick rapid fire. I love these quick questions.
Okay.
If not Bitcoin, then what coin? At least one, if ever. Nothing.
I'm not gonna go recommend anything else.
Okay, so you're loyal.
No, it's not that I'm loyal. It's just that it's not a quick answer. Yeah. I'm not gonna do that.
Bitcoin or nothing. That's the answer.
Look, there's interesting things out there. Yeah. Do your own research. But if you're looking at something that you want to preserve your wealth into the future and actually buy something serious,
so
then it's Bitcoin.
A normal pass or a veil pass for Bitcoin?
General admission gets incredible access. There's no additional fees or anything. You get to have all three stages. The whale pass is going to be incredible. We've got a whale night at the Emirates Palace. We've actually got some, through my background, we've got some yachts going to be on the dock at the conference. We've got another small intimate stage inside the whale lounge. Food, beverage, everything included. It's worth the money, the whale pass. I have to say, it's worth the money. But general admission will definitely be able to enjoy all the content, and you'll still have a good time for sure.
Thank you so much for being here today. There was a lot to learn. You know, as you guys have heard, the future of money, it's here, and it's going to be in Bitcoin MENA's conference in Abu Dhabi at the ADNEC Center from December 9th to 10th. And if you are here for this future, that's something that you definitely want to explore. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV. We're also on Instagram, X, and LinkedIn. Please do check us out. Have a lovely, lovely day. See you tomorrow.